This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
That time of the week, the time where, unlike the other 19 hours of the week, where I control all that you hear for the next hour, this program will be controlled by all that interests you, because we are about to embark on another exciting edition of
The Other Side of Midnight. Proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
That's right. Whatever you have questions about, now is the time to ask them. If you need advice on a certain subject, now is the time to ask. If you have questions about anything that goes on inside the world of the radio business, now is the time to ask. If you have a hypothetical scenario that you'd like me to weigh in on, please go ahead and ask. If you have questions about Atlantic City, cocktails, baseball, pro wrestling, or anything else, now's the time to ask. All you have to, doesn't mean I'm going to be able to answer, but I will make an honest answer, honest attempt to do so. 800-848-9222. The lines do tend to fill up quickly, so I would dial soon. And right now there's two open lines, so you'll be able to get through now, but not in 10 minutes. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Pete in Piscataway. It's that away. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Frank. Frank, do you have a favorite candy bar?
You know, I don't have much of a sweet tooth, but I do have a fondness for peanut butter. So I like things that have peanut butter in it. So I don't know if you would consider the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup candy bar.
I would,
so
yeah.
Then it might be that. Also, there was a very a peanutty candy bar called Payday that I really enjoyed. Anything with peanuts, really, or especially peanut butter, that's my jam. As I've gotten older, I've never really been wild about chocolate, but as I've gotten older, I've developed a fondness for dark chocolate. So if you can give me, and you don't find these in candy stores, really, you find them in drug stores, like a really dark, bitter piece of chocolate, and I'm talking 86 or 90% cacao, that is my jam. The darker, the more bitter, the better. If you give me a 90% dark chocolate bar, I would eat the whole thing. Even though it's supposed to be done over 5 servings, I would eat the whole thing. Mm.
All right, so, thanks, Frank. Have a good night.
You too, Pete, and a good weekend. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Liz is in Florida. Hi, Liz.
Hello, Frank.
Hi.
You are great. Extremely entertaining.
Thank you.
So, you know, every time you tell a story, you might say at the end, I'm not sure I should say this, or I think I might get into trouble if I tell you this, or if it's a story about Rachel or a family member. Do you ever get in trouble from saying something about a family member or a friend? And when they see you, do they come up to you and say, like, why would you say that to me? Or when you get home, would Rachel ever say to you, Frank, I can't believe you said that?
Liz, all the time, constantly. I woke up yesterday afternoon. I came downstairs. My wife greets me by saying, oh, there's that obnoxious guy from the radio, because she didn't like a story that I shared on the radio. It happens all the time. I have some friends that will not speak to me for a short time, usually, over a story that I tell on the radio, or other friends that will give me an angry phone call. I can't believe you said that. And it happens constantly. Sometimes I get text messages during the show of people taking issues with the things that I've said. All the time it happens, but I really think that one of the things that makes this show kind of interesting is that it's pretty real, and I put everything out there, and it creates a level of intimacy that a lot of shows don't necessarily have. So I do get in trouble. I think it can be difficult at times, especially when it's with my wife, but usually it's worth it.
I hear you, but do people still tell you their secrets?
You know, amazingly enough, they do. But, a lot of times they'll preface it, and I've never violated this, where they'll say, this is off the record, or this is not meant to be repeated on the radio, or this stays here. And I've never violated any of that. Usually, if I do tell a story from a story that's been told to me in that vein, I will change the names or just say it's attributable to an anonymous person. Liz, thank you. It's a good question. 800-848-9222. Alex is in Brooklyn. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for taking the call. And I like that question that Liz asked you. But
yeah, that was a good
I
question.
Have a question about questions. Mm. What are some of your favorite questions that you ever heard a radio host or TV personality ask of their guests?
You know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. We know it when we see it. But I could read a question that a talented interviewer might ask someone and not think mm-hmm. it's that good of a question. But then when I hear the response from someone, then you realize what a good question that was. This is not radio specific, but a guy that did that really well was Tim Russert. He was so good at not only being able to find the right questions to ask people, but to find appropriate follow-ups and appropriate supporting material. But in terms of, in terms of really specific questions of guests, I don't know that
what
I could pick a specific question.
Some interviews that stood out to you?
There are many. So one that stood out as being very memorable is Sean Hannity, who, I'm not really that big of a fan of, but, I give him a lot of credit for everything he's been able to do in terms of success. But in 2006, after Bob Grant had retired from WOR in New York, Hannity invited Bob Grant on his show for an hour, on his national show for an hour, maybe even 2 hours. And as part of that conversation, they had on one of my favorite talk show hosts as well, Jay Diamond. And to listen to the three of them, Hannity, Bob Grant, and Jay Diamond, all sound like they were having fun talking about radio, it was just so magical to me. And there are still times these days where I go back and listen to that conversation, because I think it was just so great. So that is easily one of my favorites. Howard Stern is very good with a lot of different conversations. His conversations with certain people over the years that have really stood out include someone like Stone Cold Steve Austin, who, I like when Howard gets a little outside of his comfort zone and asks people about different things that he doesn't necessarily know about. Wrestling is one, because I think he brings a very creative approach to it. Another one that I don't know that a lot of people would really appreciate is an interview that Curtis Sliwa did about 14 years ago with Lindley DeVecchio. Lindley DeVecchio was an FBI agent who was on trial for murder, and I believe he was guilty of these, by the way, and he helped, supposedly, Greg Scarpa carry out these murders. And somehow, Lindley DeVecchio agreed to an interview with Curtis Sliwa. To my recollection, that's the only interview he's ever done. And that interview was so interesting because, one, it was so unique. I don't know of any other radio interview that he's done. And it was amazing to me because DeVecchio lied through his teeth throughout the entire interview. And I have gone to that interview for source material time and time again. I think, so those are a few. More recently, John Catsimatidis did an interesting interview with Donald Trump that I thought kind of brought out both of their best sides. And those are a few that most immediately come to mind. But there are a lot of others. There are a lot of others over the years,
Howard,
that I enjoyed.
Frank, you mentioned Howard Stern, and there was actually one conversation that he had that really stood out to me. It was not with a guest. It was someone who called in and said that he was a serial killer. I don't know if you ever heard that. And he started interviewing that caller to get all the information. I don't know if the cops ended up catching up with that dude, but you can Google it. You put in radio caller. That's the first thing that comes up.
I don't remember that, actually. I know Tom Likas did something similar to that, and Tom's a real master at dealing with callers. And you know who also is very good? Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien does this podcast. Now, part of it is, when you do a podcast, and I do this with the Racket Report, or my recent interview with Ron Kuby, part of it is, when you're not on the radio, you don't have the limitations of time. If you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to talk with someone, it's somewhat limiting. If you can talk to someone for an hour and a half, and you're not rushed, you can ask a question 100 different ways. So that's really interesting. But Conan O'Brien did an interview with David Letterman maybe about 6 years ago that I thought was really interesting, and the kind of thing that you don't generally hear anywhere, really. But that's a podcast interview. That's kind of a separate category. Trying to think what those are. Those are a few that really stand out to me. But if I had more time, I could probably make a list of 100. Trying to think what else really comes to mind. But those are a few. It's a good question. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Greg is in Maryland, listening on WCBM. Hi, Greg.
How you doing? I was just wondering if Carmen William got around to apologizing for destroying your bookmark.
Greg, no. Not only did he not apologize, but whenever he sees me still using this half of a Hanna-Barbera bookmark that somebody sent me, he takes credit and reminds me that he broke it. So no, he has not apologized at all. And you know, he's such a sweet boy sometimes, he's such a rascal at other times. You know, for instance, he came out of the bath. His mom gave him a bath last night. He comes out of the bath, and I'm doing some work in the room, and he comes and sits next to me, and he just says, something to the effect of, I had a lot of fun with you, right? Which was really nice because we were playing together the whole day. And then a little bit later, I'm carrying him to the bathroom to brush his teeth, and he pokes me in the eye and won't say sorry. So he's irascible, that young man, sometimes. But no, I can honestly tell you he has not apologized for that. 800-848-9222. Neil, what's your question, Neil?
Hey, Frank, you're at a meet and greet with William Shatner, and you have an assigned time to be with him. So you're waiting, and you're drinking your favorite drink, the Lime Ricky. You have about five of them. And all of a sudden, you got to go to the men's room. Now, your time to see him is coming up. And if you're not there on time, you're going to miss the interview with the meet and greet. So you run to the men's room, and there's a sign, out of order, use the men's room on the next floor. But the women's room is there. So when you say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to try to get away with it. When you go into the women's room and take the chance rather than miss your appointment with William Shatner?
I would knock first, but yes, absolutely I would. I would absolutely use the ladies' room in that instance, or if it was a place that had a gender-neutral room, I would use that. But yes, absolutely. I'm not going to allow perfectly good toilet bowls and stalls to be wasted. But yeah, I would knock and see if anyone was in there first, and assuming that there were no women in there, then I would go in and use it. If there were women in there, then I would wait for one of them to be free. Neil, thank you. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. By the way, whoever comes up with the best questions in the eyes of our illustrious staff here, then they will get some sort of a prize from the Other Side of Midnight online store. What that prize will be, I'm not sure, but it will be something. All right, 800-848-9222. We'll continue with your questions straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is the great James Brown. Today would have been his birthday. James Brown gone, I guess about 20, no, not quite 20 years now, but about 18 years. And he would have been 91 today had he have lived. An incredible performer who not only produced some great music, but gave the start to the illustrious public career of Al Sharpton, and certainly we should all be grateful to him for that. All right, if you're just tuning in, we are in the midst of an Ask Frank Anything, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Robert in Suffolk. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning, Frank.
Morning.
Why has the Libertarian Party gained more traction as a third major party? If I remember right, William Weld and his running mate were the last two major candidates for the presidential election that were party members?
No. I mean, when you say that were party members, what do you mean?
They had joined the Libertarian Party and ran on that ticket.
Yeah, well, so William Weld ran for vice president in 2016. The presidential candidate was Gary Johnson in that year. Yeah. That was actually 2016. That was their best electoral year in terms of popular vote ever. And really, I think a lot of that was dissatisfaction with Donald Trump from certain aspects of the right. You had a lot of kind of what they call now the never Trump Republicans voting for Gary Johnson, and they got 3.5% of the vote, which is more than they had ever gotten. But there was another ticket in 2020. But they're actually, if you go, depending on how you count, at least vis-a-vis the presidency, their most successful election was, I think, 1976, when or maybe 1980, when you had Roger McBride get an electoral vote. One of the presidential electors actually voted for Roger McBride. And then in 1980, David Koch of Koch Brothers fame, he actually ran, and nobody remembers this, but he actually ran as the Libertarian candidate for vice president that year, spent millions of dollars of his own money, but they still only got about 1.1% of the vote. Actually, I think that was the year they got the electoral vote, 1980. But I think your question is an interesting one. For starters, a lot of the folks from the Libertarian Party would say that your premise is inaccurate. They would say that the Libertarian Party not only has done better than any third party in America over the last 100 years, but they'll point out that there are more Libertarian Party elected officials in this country than any other party other than Democrat and Republican. And as you mentioned, Johnson and Weld in 2016, they got 3.5% of the vote. But the ticket in 2020 was two people you'd never heard of, and they got over 1% of the vote. And I think a lot of folks that are libertarians would say the fact that they've gotten over 1% of the vote for three straight elections is a reflection that the candidates don't even matter, that people are responding to that libertarian messaging. But I think I know what you mean, and I think I largely agree with you. I think the two reasons that the Libertarian Party hasn't become, say, a third major party. One, it's the problem that every third party has, which is the Democrats and Republicans have rigged the system. It's, you know, for instance, in New York, if you want to run for president as a, you know how many signatures Donald Trump needed to get to be on the ballot in New York State to run as a Republican?
100,000?
Zero. He had to get zero signatures to be the Republican nominee for president. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Jill Stein, Cornel West, the Libertarian candidate, anyone that's seeking to run as a third party candidate in New York State, they're going to have to collect 45,000 signatures. Now, that's just in one state. In state after state, you have Democrats and Republicans who control the state legislature in every single state. They have rigged the game so that it's very easy to get on the ballot if you're a Democrat or a Republican, and it's very difficult in many states to get on the ballot as a third party candidate. Then if you ever actually manage to get elected as a third party or independent candidate, as Jesse Ventura did in Minnesota, then the Democrats and Republicans kind of collude to work together against you to make sure you have no achievements to speak of. That happened recently with the independent governor of Alaska. Now, there have been some successful independent governors, people like Angus King in Maine come to mind. Some folks would point to Lowell Weicker as a success in terms of being an independent governor. But the other aspect of libertarianism specifically that I think has failed to take root is I think a lot of people like the idea of being libertarian. They like the idea of freedom. They like the idea of not the government not telling them what to do. They like the idea of not having their phones tapped, and they like the idea of low taxes. But they don't like the idea of privatized sidewalks. They don't like the idea of no sanitation services or a privatized fire department. And really, the logical extension of libertarianism is not just low taxes and legalized drugs. It's privatized everything. So if you go to a country like Somalia, where everybody that has a private militia is a big shot, that's in some ways a libertarian paradise. There's no central government. The government doesn't do anything. And I think people, even if they say they want limited government or less government, they really do want the government to do a lot of things it does. In spite of what they may say, they all want Social Security. In spite of what they may say, they all want Medicare. In spite of what they may say, they all don't want to have 11-year-olds work in unsafe conditions in the workplace, right? In some sort of sweatshop. So there are aspects of government regulation that are immensely popular. And when you have that, I think it's going to be very difficult for the libertarians to kind of exceed more than 5%. In any general election polling. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Jim is in Wisconsin. Hi, Jim.
Oh, good morning, Frank. Frank, you always seem so unflappable on the radio. I'm wondering if you've had any embarrassing moments that only you knew about and no one else caught on that you could share with us.
Embarrassing moment. Well, I've had a number of embarrassing moments. Usually I just say what they are. You know, a couple of times I've had nosebleeds on the air, you know, while, you know, my nose will just start bleeding while I'm in the midst of talking. That's it's you know what? It's not so much embarrassing as it is inconvenient. So maybe that's not a good example. One that stands out just because I was very new in radio at the time. One of the first days that I ever spent, I might have been my very first day on the radio in college, WNYU. I was doing the news, and it wasn't even really the radio. They had kind of a minor league version of WNYU, which was only heard on closed circuit television in all the dorms. So nobody was probably nobody was listening in all likelihood. But anyway, I was trying to do a news story. I was a news anchor, and I was trying to do a news story about New York City. But instead of saying New York City, I pronounced New York City with an SH. I inadvertently made a Freudian slip and said New York blanky. And that was really embarrassing to me, and that made me a bit flustered. Other than that, there have been a couple of times where... No, you know, I was going to say that there have been a few times where I said something that was false, but I don't, you know, I never pretend to be a guy that really knows everything. And if I say something that's inaccurate, I always try to correct myself, or the person that I'm talking to will usually correct me. But that one day in college is the one that stands out where I mispronounced New York City. Thanks, Jim. 800-848-9222. Let's say hello to Ray in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Frank. Two quick ones. Does Rachel ever get jealous when you mention old girlfriends on the radio? You'll tell little stories. And three places that you want to visit on your bucket list in the world?
Well, no, I don't think Rachel gets jealous. I think Rachel's very secure in our relationship. And if I wanted to be with any of those other women, I would have stayed with them. So no, I don't. I mean, I can't speak for her, but no, she's never expressed that to me. I in terms of three places that I'd love to visit, I would like to go, you know, I've never been to Asia, right? So I'd love to go somewhere in Asia, whether that's Japan, whether that's China, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's somewhere else. I've never been anywhere in Asia. I think that would be really interesting, and I'd love to check that out. And while I've been to Italy, I've never been to Sicily, and I've heard nothing but great things about Sicilian culture and the Sicilian cuisine and the Sicilian food. And then, believe it or not, this is kind of an easy one, which I could probably get done sooner rather than later, but I have never been to New Orleans, and everybody always tells me how great New Orleans is and how much I'd love it and all the great things there are to do there. And I actually know some people that either used to live there or do live there, and I'm sure I would like it. So that's probably number three. So I'm going to say Asia, Sicily, and New Orleans. Thank you, Ray. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Robert is in Maryland. Hello, Robert.
Oh, good evening. Thanks for taking me. I have a quick question and maybe some other comments. What do you think, who is backing all the chapters of Students for Justice in Palestine, particularly where they have paid for a lot of tents on certain campuses? Those might be millionaires or billionaires.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I don't know. I think, you know, a lot's been written about folks like George Soros and his support of a lot of these groups. Also, the tech entrepreneur Neville Roy Singham and his wife Jody Evans, they've been the main funders for groups like the People's Forum, which have organized at least four of the protests that have taken place in my area since October 7th, including one of the rallies in Times Square that occurred.
Qatar.
The country of Qatar.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. And then, but the thing that you got to keep in mind, though, Robert, is at least tents aren't expensive, right? Tents are, I don't know, $100, $200. The people that are at Columbia, by and large, they're able to afford tuition of about $60,000 to $70,000 a year. So either them or their parents, they're able to form tuition, room and board, which could go in some cases up to $80,000 a year. So chances are they're going to be able to find a couple hundred bucks for a tent. So that's the aspect of when people bring that up that I find a little silly, honestly, when they say, how do they afford the tents? I mean, the tents are not made out of diamonds. They're not made out of gold pressed platinum. The tents are fairly cheap. And so is the bike chain that you could get for $45. But that doesn't mean that these demonstrations aren't being organized by a lot of other groups like the People's Forum or, other similar groups. You know, I do think they are. I mean, they're very well organized. They don't just pop up overnight. I've worked as a organizer in the political sphere for many years. You know how difficult it is to put together one event if you have a month's notice, even if it's something that everybody thinks is a good idea? It's tough. Tough to get people to show up. It's tough to get people to coordinate. It's tough to coordinate a program. It's tough to, work on logistics. But to be able to do these day in and day out in multiple different places, it's tough. So I do think there's some coordination. As for the involvement of countries like Qatar, I have no idea. It's just speculation on my part, but I'd be interested in learning the answer to that. Certainly, Mayor Eric Adams keeps claiming that that's the case. 800-848-9222. Leo, what's your question?
Frank, I know in the past somebody asked you which actually president you would choose to be if you can move in the history. And I want to ask you, because you know, you kind of know the history of American presidents, which, with your character, which of the presidential three wives you think you would like to spend time as a president or as a partner?
I'm missing something in your question. Which of the president's what?
President's wife, the first lady.
Oh, which of the first lady?
If you would put as your first lady. And also the time which she was in, which you would spend the time 4 years or 8 years as a president, not to be president at that time, to be husband of the first wife. I mean, first lady.
Right. So who would I want out of the existing first ladies to have been?
Not existing. That could be moving in history, in the fantasy. You can be General Washington's wife.
Right. Okay. So you want me to pick which of the first ladies I would pick as my first lady?
Yes.
Okay. I think all of the first ladies in recent years, for the most part, I think have been very classy. I really like Melania Trump. I don't have strong feelings about Jill Biden either way, but I really liked Michelle Obama. I thought Laura Bush, as critical as I was of her husband, I thought she was a real class act. But if I had to pick one, I'm picking Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. To me, she just exudes elegance and style. She exudes intellect and beauty. She exudes both motherhood and sexiness. I think what she brings in terms of decorating is second to none. I think her ability to, if not only is she very attractive, but I always got the sense that she was a very loving, caring mother. And in spite of all of her husband's peccadilloes, which, you know, we keep learning more about as more and more documents become unsealed, I think she was a very devoted wife to her husband. And that's what every husband, I think, wants. So I would pick Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And not to be said, you know, again, there are so many great first ladies throughout American history. Obviously, the top of a lot of people's list has to be Eleanor Roosevelt. But honestly, I wouldn't want to be married to Eleanor Roosevelt. But that doesn't mean she wasn't a great first lady. If you listen to the stories or read the stories of the incredible partnership that Abigail Adams had with John Adams, I mean, it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And look, can you think of a woman tougher than Dolly Madison? While the White House is being burned down, she has the wherewithal to grab George Washington's picture as the White House is being burned to the ground by the British. I mean, that's a tough lady. And she's serving ice cream. That's extraordinary. But if I'm picking one, I'm picking Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Terry's in Rockland. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Frank. Carmine had a homework assignment a while back, and I didn't hear how it turned out if you talked about it.
Yeah, so I mentioned that to my wife that our newspaper carrier, Donna, who calls into this program from time to time, had said that that she said that Carmine was going to be ridiculed by his peers if he didn't do it. And I said I was going to do it with him. And so my wife took pity on me, and she put it together very quickly. And it was basically just a recreation of the earth. So she ended up doing it, and he had an assignment to hand in. So I appreciate you reminding me to follow up on that. It did not occur. Thank you. All right. We're going to continue with your questions in a moment. One open line, 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
It's my party, and I'll cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you. Nobody knows where my Johnny has gone, but Judy left the same.
Of course, the great Leslie Gore. This is a birthday bumper music selection from Stuart Shanker, who is celebrating his birthday today. I believe it is actually the big 7-0 for him. Happy birthday, Stuart. Stuart's a great guy. Stuart's a friend of my mom's, but he has such a passion for radios. He collects and restores classic old school radios, both old school transistor radios and tabletop radios. He gave me a wonderful transistor radio from, I think, the 60s or the 70s. It still sounds great. It's beautiful. And then he sent me a couple of the pictures of radios that he listens to this program on, including one from 1947, which is just great. So anybody that loves radio and radios as much as Stuart Shanker is certainly worthy of having all his birthday wishes come true. And apparently, at least one involves Leslie Gore. Happy birthday, Stuart. All right. If you are just tuning in, I am doing my best to answer your questions on any subject. Whatever you have questions about, now is the time to ask them. Doesn't mean I'll know the answer, but if you want to know my opinion on something or something that I've experienced, I'll tell you. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Igor in New Jersey. Hi, Igor.
Hey, greetings, Frank. Should a voter be concerned about voting for a potential candidate for president if they know that in his past or in her past that they've had a serious addiction, in the sense that maybe it represents a personality flaw, or perhaps under the great pressure of being president, they might relapse? Is that something that would concern you?
You know, it's a good question, and I don't know that it's something that I've really contemplated until this second. So I'm thinking about this as I'm speaking. My gut tells me no. I mean, obviously, there have been presidents with addiction issues. You know, George W. Bush comes to mind with his alcoholism, and I'm sure there's been many others. I don't think so. I think the nature of the personality of someone that would want to be president, that would actually think out of the hundreds of millions of people in this country that they are so uniquely qualified to be better at leading the country and have their finger on the button of the largest or the second largest nuclear stockpile in the world, it takes such an ego that you're likely to have some serious personality defects. And I mean that sincerely. And I think a lot of the time that manifests itself into philandering and, you know, wanting to, you know, be with a lot of different women. That was certainly the case with John F. Kennedy, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, but certainly even folks like Lyndon Johnson. Other times it manifests itself in terms of gluttony, in terms of, you know, a lust for food. And then I think at other times it that same personality might result in addiction. So I don't think so. I think chances are if you've gotten to the point where you've gotten your life together enough where you're able to run a viable campaign for the presidency and actually get elected, I think if you haven't relapsed during the campaign, I think the chances of a relapse under the stress of the presidency are maybe not non-existent, but I think it's unlikely. It's a good question, though. I'm going to keep thinking about that, but no, I don't. I wouldn't have an issue with voting for a former addict. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Brandon in New Jersey. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Frank. I'm going to try to articulate this better than I did to Matt Blaze. The song Cats in the Cradle, I always grew up, I thought it was Cat Stevens. I heard Curtis Sliwa say that he thought it was Cat Stevens, and I think my whole family thought it was him. Do you think that's a possible Mandela effect? I know a lot of people liken the song Father and Son that Cat Stevens did to the Confusion, but they sound nothing alike.
Hmm.
So do you think that's a possible Mandela effect?
That is. So I think you're right. I think that is exactly the an example of the Mandela effect. I just checked just now to see if Cat Stevens ever recorded an alternative version of Cats in the Cradle, and he never did. So yeah, I think the issue of Cat Stevens recording Cats in the Cradle instead of Harry Chapin is a very common misconception. I think a lot of it is due to the similar names, right? You have the name Cat Stevens and the title of the song, Cats in the Cradle. So because his name is Cat, a lot of people just wrongly assume that that he recorded the song. So no doubt about it. That's definitely an example of the Mandela effect. Al in New York. Hello, Al.
Hey, good morrow, superstar Frank. Listen, can I call an audible just real quick? You were just talking about first ladies, and I know you're a presidential scholar. Question.
Well, I'm not a scholar, but I am interested in presidential history.
You're a scholar, believe me. Many, many a day I tarried with you, and you always do your stuff. Three of the first five presidents died on July 4th, two actually on the same day.
Right.
Which president was born on July 4th?
Calvin Coolidge.
100% right. Okay, and I have the questions, but just real quick, and I shouldn't be taking so much time, but I'm sorry, my humble apologies. Two suggestions. Could you have every day because I know you go across America, could you have like a city spotlight every day? Like, you know, the good folks in Baltimore or in Minnesota, you know, that might be nice. And once in a while, would you let Matt or Tony have like a 15-minute, like Mervis used to do, you know, to fill in, like maybe if a guest doesn't show up, something like that. You know, I know you used to do it a couple of years ago. I forgot who that gentleman was. Started with a Mer.
I'm not sure I follow. So if a guest, well, first of all, I feel
suppose like,
go ahead.
Sometimes the guests cancel on you. They can't, for some reason, they confuse the day with the night and all that.
Right,
so if you would have given them like a 15-minute shot to do what that guy did 2 or 3 years ago, started with a name, M-E-R, but you know,
As I was just reminded by Matt Blaze when I asked what was going on another show that they were engineering, they apparently have a lot of other things to do. So I don't know that they could take away from their existing duties to host this program, but I'm certainly open to it. If they want to do it and somebody doesn't show up, fine. Why not? Absolutely.
Yeah. My question was to you was, what was your earliest happy memory? And if Joe Franklin, Bob Grant, and your grandpa were together and they were here for one day, where would you take them? How would you entertain them? And where would you go to eat? And that's it. And thanks very much for me taking so much time.
My earliest happy memory, probably my third birthday. I remember my third birthday pretty well, and that was fun. There was a clown there. He made balloon animals, and a lot of my family and friends were there. That was probably that. And then, let's see, if Bob Grant, Joe Franklin, and my grandfather were still around, where would I take them? Well, honestly, so it would be Italian, but a lot of the Italian restaurants that I think they would enjoy are not there anymore. I would probably take them to, and my favorite restaurant is Michael's of Brooklyn in Brooklyn. And I've never taken anybody there that didn't love it. So we would go there, and especially both Bob and my grandfather were Italian. And so I think they would get a big kick out of the food. And but a lot of the staff there really likes Bob, so he would get a kick out of the fact that they are enamored with him. And knowing Joe, you know, Joe could find something fun to eat at any restaurant. He would enjoy it as well. But it would be a hoot to go to the Rio Diner with Bob Grant as well. And look, have you ever had a bad meal at the Rio Diner? Probably not. That's in Woodbridge. All right. Three open lines. We're going to try and take as many questions as we can in the next 6 minutes. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Bob is in Baltimore listening on WCBM. Hi, Bob.
Oh, Frank, good morning. Frank, here's something that drives me crazy sometimes. Here's the question. Do you think President Kennedy's assassination was full of conspirators?
I do think it's more likely than not that there was a conspiracy to kill him, yes.
Yay that you said that, and I'll tell you why. Because every time I've ever bring this up, they go, oh, this is so old, this is so done, and it's so this, and there was no, you know, conspirators. Well, okay, well, two of the most famous had conspirators practically on every corner, Archduke Ferdinand and Abraham Lincoln. We have three of them buried here in the Baltimore Greenmount Cemetery.
And let's not forget one of history's most famous assassinations, Julius Caesar. Quite a
Thank
few conspirators
you. Hello.
There. But Bob, the other thing, I don't think it's old at all. I think it's very, very
good.
Worth looking into, because the government, including president after president, Democrat and Republican, have tried so hard to keep documents relating to the assassination from coming public. So the fact that these people are trying so hard to keep something secret, that makes me want to know even more.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Bob, thank you. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Two open lines. George is in New York City. Hi, George.
Hi. Hi there. Conspiratorially speaking, there were so many of them that were deciding on the merits, you know, of the Kennedy assassination, the Warren Commission members.
George, what's your question here? Because
right.
I want to get to everybody.
Quickly, here's the question. Robert Kennedy, I believe in passing, I heard that he wanted two polls done, right? One between him and Trump and another one separately between him and Biden. And that way, you know, people would figure out how many votes he's providing to either of the candidates or taking away votes from them. What do you think about that proposition he made?
Well, so are you talking about the proposition where he offered to drop out if Biden makes that agreement? I mean, I'm not necessarily sure I follow the question.
All right. What do you think? Okay, I'm just going to ask it from my point of view. What do you think if between him and Trump, there's a poll done, you know, a fair poll and neutrally, et cetera, on the one hand, and then separately another poll between him and Biden, in order to figure out the differentials in terms of vote grabbing on his behalf.
All right, I'm still not sure I follow the question, George, but I'm going to do my best to follow what you're saying. So I spoke with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. about this, not last night, but the previous night. And he said he just had a Zogby poll conducted, not with 1,500 people or 2,000 people, as most of these national polls are done, but in excess of 26,000 people were polled. And what that poll showed is that whether he's in the race or not, Biden has a very tough time not know what Kennedy said is there's no scenario in which if the election were held today that Biden could win. He said, and this is what the poll says, that he does show his presence hurts Trump a bit more than it hurts Biden. What Kennedy said is that while Biden loses either way, if Kennedy is not in the race, Trump wins the states of Virginia and Maine. But if Kennedy is in the race, then Trump loses those states, Virginia and Maine, and Biden wins those states. The numbers that Kennedy cited from the Zogby poll show that if he weren't running, about 57% of his supporters would otherwise vote for President Trump. And I think that makes sense. You know, I mean, if you look at a lot of the issues that he's been highlighting, a lot of them are issues that would appeal more to Trump supporters than Biden supporters. So I hope that answers your question. I'm not sure if it does. 800-848-9222. Hello, Stephen. What's your question?
Yeah, my question was, I'd like to know if you could tell me, were there any presidents of the United States of America that did not shake a woman's hand due to religious purposes, reasons?
An Orthodox Jewish man might?
Like that type of thing, I guess. Orthodox Jewish, I guess. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
You know, that's a good question. None that I'm aware of, but I will absolutely research that. I feel like that's something I would have heard if that had happened. I'll look into that a bit more, but if it's been published anywhere, it's not something that I'm aware of. Sorry. Tony, Matt Blaze, do you guys have a winner for best
question? Liz from Florida.
Liz from Florida! Which was her question?
You get in trouble for the things you say on the radio.
Listen, Florida, call back. We have a prize for you. The rest of you keep asking questions.